Chapter 5, Segment B. Laws and Regulations Affecting Privacy and Confidentiality. To develop a sense of the status of privacy and confidentiality, we will look at four greatly influential and complex regulations that are helping to mold the contours of the privacy and confidentiality landscape. The Privacy Act of 1974. Directly related to privacy and tangentially related to healthcare, the Federal Privacy Act of 1974 highlights privacy from the government-citizen standpoint. The Privacy Act of 1974 provides, quote, "No agency shall disclose any record which is contained in a system of records by any means of communication to any person or to another agency, except pursuant to a written request by or with the prior written consent of the individual to whom the record pertains, unless disclosure of the record would be." The text continues with a list of exceptions. The Act requires both administrative and physical security safeguards. Among the exceptions are law enforcement purposes, congressional investigations, and the Department of Homeland Security. Certain states have equivalent statutes. Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA. The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, or HIPAA, has far-reaching implications for many different areas of healthcare, including insurance coverage, healthcare fraud and abuse, and medical liability reform. However, HIPAA is perhaps best known for its regulation of privacy and confidentiality in healthcare contexts. The subtitle of HIPAA that affects health information privacy is known as Administrative Simplification. The regulations based on this subtitle are divided into the Privacy Rule, 45 CFR Part 160 and subparts A and E of Part 164, which restricts disclosures and limits the use of PHI without the patient's permission, and the Security Rule, 45 CFR Part 160 and subparts A and C of Part 164, which establishes administrative, physical, and technical safeguards to prevent the inadvertent disclosure of electronic PHI. If a qualified statistician determines that the risk of identifying the patient from the information in question is small, or if all of the 18 specific identifiers are removed from the data, then the information is considered de-identified and does not fall under the definition of PHI. The 18 identifiers are as follows. Names. All geographical subdivisions smaller than a state, including street address, city, county, precinct, zip code, etc. All elements of dates, except year, for dates directly related to an individual, including birth date, admission date, discharge date, date of death, and all ages over 89. Phone numbers. Fax numbers. Email addresses, social security numbers, medical record numbers, health plan beneficiary numbers, account numbers, certificate or license numbers, vehicle identifiers and serial numbers, including license plate numbers, device identifiers and serial numbers, web addresses or universal resource locators, or URLs, internet protocol or IP address numbers, biometric identifiers, including fingerprints and voice prints, full face images and any comparable images, and any other unique identifying number, characteristic, or code, with some narrow exceptions. As good practice, unless the contents of a patient's health record have been de-identified, the patient's health record should be broadly construed to fall under the Privacy Rule's disclosure standards. The statute establishes a duty for healthcare providers to notify patients of their rights to confidentiality, including the right to receive an accounting of the disclosures made under the provisions of the Act, and their rights to access and, in some cases, amend their PHI. HIPAA provides civil and criminal penalties for violations by those to whom the law applies. HIPAA initially applied only to covered entities, which include healthcare providers, health plans, and health clearinghouses. However, the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act of 2009 extended HIPAA's requirements to business associates, that is, entities likely to come into contact with or have the opportunity to access PHI that perform a business function for the covered entity. When a covered entity or business associate contemplates disclosing PHI, it must obtain written authorization from the patient prior to disclosure and must also keep close records of disclosures of PHI. However, HIPAA provides for certain legitimate disclosures of PHI that do not require written authorization from patients. These exemptions include the disclosure of PHI in order to facilitate medical treatment of the patient or billing, as well as other healthcare operations as outlined in the regulations. HIPAA obligates covered entities to actively minimize the potential for unintended harm by imposing a duty to make a reasonable effort to disclose only the minimum necessary PHI required to achieve a legitimate and specifically exempted purpose. Covered entities also have a responsibility to appoint a privacy official, as well as a contact person to field patient or health consumer complaints, and train staff and employees to comply with the privacy rule. Regarding response to breaches and penalties, although individuals and organizations aspire to comply with HIPAA and thereby respect a patient's privacy, the history of human endeavor is less than perfect. For unauthorized disclosures of PHI, HIPAA prescribes not only a system of penalties, but also a series of notice requirements. As for penalties, please see Table 5.1 in your text. The penalties listed in Table 5.1 in your text are considered civil penalties. The intentional disclosure to sell, transfer, or use PHI for personal financial gain has a fine of up to $250,000 and imprisonment for up to 10 years. The unauthorized disclosure of unencrypted PHI creates additional notification duties to notify affected individuals within 60 days of becoming aware of the breach, notify major media outlets and HHS if a breach involves 500 or more plan participants, provide in the notice to individuals, at a minimum, 5 specific categories of information, and deliver the notice by first-class mail to each affected individual's last known address. The Poneman Institute performed a 2010 cost of data breach study of U.S. companies. The study indicates that the average cost of a data breach is $214 per compromised record and $7.2 million per organization. While the intentions behind the creation of HIPAA are to protect a patient's right to privacy and uphold confidentiality, the rules are so specific, complex, and laden with exceptions that the act is often misunderstood and inappropriately executed. Figure 5.1 in your text shows the top 10 HIPAA myths. The Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act of 2008. Signed into law on May 21, 2008 by President George W. Bush, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act of 2008, or GINA, is a U.S. congressional act that prohibits the use of a person's genetic information for purposes of health insurance and employment. The law prohibits health plans and insurers from denying coverage to healthy patrons or adjusting premium rates when based solely on a genetic predisposition, regardless of how the insurer or health plan became aware of this PHI. It is also against the law for health insurance organizations to request or require genetic information in order to make decisions regarding an individual's eligibility for health insurance premiums, contribution amounts, or coverage terms, regardless of how the insurer or health plan became aware of this PHI. GINA also prohibits employers from discriminating on the basis of a person's genetic code. Though relatively obscure today, especially in comparison with HIPAA and ACA privacy provision, GINA was touted by the late Senator Edward Kennedy as, quote, the first major new civil rights bill of the new century, unquote, when the bill was passed unanimously by the Senate and with an overwhelming majority in the House of Representatives in 2008. The text of GINA includes 5 congressional findings. 1. Advances in genetics, quote, give rise to the potential misuse of genetic information to discriminate in health insurance and employment, unquote. 2. The current explosion in the science of genetics and the history of sterilization laws by the states based on early genetic science compels congressional action in this area. Because some genetic traits are most prevalent in particular groups, Members of a particular group may be stigmatized or discriminated against as a result of that genetic information. 4. Congress clearly has a compelling public interest in relieving the fear of discrimination and in prohibiting its actual practice in employment and health insurance. And 5. Federal legislation establishing a national and uniform basic standard is necessary to fully protect the public from discrimination and allay their concerns about the potential for discrimination, thereby allowing individuals to take advantage of genetic testing, technologies, research, and new therapies. The first congressional finding is one of the main reasons GINA was developed. While the results of genetic testing and research offer several benefits to society, including the diagnoses of diseases, identification of health risk factors, prediction of future diseases, and discovery of new preventative care options, in their finding, Congress acknowledges that because the wealth of information obtained via genetic research and testing could also be used negatively, such advances in medical technology call for new protections of individuals. The second congressional finding acknowledges a history of using the science of genetics to justify legal and compulsory sterilization of U.S. citizens with what were considered, quote, genetic defects, unquote. Congress notes that since 1981, state laws pertaining to sterilization have either been repealed or revised to include due process and equal protection. In this finding, Congress determined that both the current state of genetic science as well as the United States' history of sterilization laws necessitates congressional action to prevent future genetics-based mandatory sterilization practices. The third congressional finding acknowledges that some genetic conditions are associated with race, ethnicity, and gender, and that, in the past, such associations have been used to justify discriminatory practices, such as state-mandated compulsory genetic screening of members of specific races or ethnicities. In accordance with this finding, Congress determined that genetic testing of individuals must be voluntary. The fourth congressional finding cites an instance of unlawful pre-employment genetic screening in acknowledging that Congress has a duty to both allay the fear and prohibit the use of genetics-based discrimination for all individuals when seeking employment or when obtaining health insurance. The fifth congressional finding acknowledges that while many states have genetic non-discrimination laws, these laws are largely inconsistent in what they allow and prohibit. Therefore, Congress determined that it is necessary to establish basic nationwide standards in order to provide consistent protection from genetic discrimination and allow all individuals the opportunity to, quote, take advantage of genetic testing, technologies, research, and new therapies, unquote. In short, whether an individual is trying to obtain health care services, health insurance, or employment, that individual may not be denied access or employment on the basis of his or her genetic information. GINA exists to ensure all individuals are treated fairly, and any entity found guilty of breaking this law will be punished to the fullest extent of the law. The Affordable Care Act and Patient Privacy. Recall that decisional privacy protects the patient from interference with personal decisions. The implementation of the Affordable Care Act raised the question of the proper role for government in implementing the healthcare decisions of its citizens. Even the ACA's requirement to purchase health insurance that contains certain mandated services can impact a patient's treatment decision. That is, whether a benefit is covered, for example, a mandated benefit, or not, can determine whether the insured will access the services or not. Also related to decisional and informational privacy is the question of how disclosing Medicare patients' information to accountable care organizations impacts those patients' decisions to consent to certain health care, such as mental health care or fertility-related health care. As permitted by the ACA, a Medicare patient's utilization information is provided to ACOs and conceivably to participating providers. Case study: Needle Exchange Program at a Drug Rehabilitation Clinic. You have been asked to sit on an ethics review board. The CEO of your clinic is especially interested in opening the door for a new public health research project to begin in your clinic, and you get the impression that he placed you on this review board to facilitate the project's acceptance. He wants you to report to him on how the ethics committee deliberates about this project, and also requests that you give him the names of any committee members who oppose the study. The project is sponsored by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to determine whether over-the-counter sale of sterile syringes is more effective than needle exchange programs for drug users. The study randomly assigns 500 intravenous drug users and 500 former intravenous drug users to one of two groups. The first group of participants is enrolled in a needle exchange program. The second group is given a description of the syringe packs that participants can purchase at a large discount by using a neighborhood pharmacy that your clinic's CEO co-owns. Researchers also want to determine which method of needle distribution is more effective in preventing infectious diseases such as hepatitis and HIV, which are transmitted by shared needles. Subjects will be tested for these and other diseases before and after the study period. The relative statistics will then be compared to see which method was more effective at reducing infection rates. Researchers are also interested in seeing if the availability of clean needles will cause a relapse in recovered users, and so the subjects will also be tested for the presence of drugs before and after the study. Additional potentially ethically relevant facts. Jane is a supervisor for the maintenance department at your clinic, and as a heroin addict in recovery, would like to take part in the study, but is concerned with confidentiality since no one at the clinic knows of her prior drug abuse. Torrance is a pharmacist at your CEO's pharmacy who despises drug abuse and, if truth be told, drug abusers, too. The research protocol calls for the subject records to be kept through the same electronic medical record system, Logistical Electronic Administrative Knowledge System, or LEECS, that houses regular patient records, including billing, though they are in a separate database. The clinic also uses LEECS to keep employment records. Activity. Write a short essay outlining what you think should be done in this case and why. Should the review committee approve the protocol? What, if any, changes should be made to the study? Identify any ethical problems that exist and attempt to identify those that may arise, then argue for a resolution or suggest ways to avoid them. Feel free to be creative with your answer, but do not fabricate or assume additional facts that solve the ethical dilemmas for you or allow you to circumvent the ethical dilemmas. For example, some might argue that it is never right to operate drug exchange programs due to a perceived complicity with illicit drug use. That is a fine position to take, but for the purposes of this activity, taking that approach avoids the question being asked, instead of resolving it. As you write your answer, please identify which philosophical perspectives is or are reflected in your answer. For example, utilitarian, virtue ethics, etc., or any combination of these. Also identify the ethical norms and principles that helped you make your decision. Section 5.3. The future of privacy and confidentiality. The laws discussed in this chapter came about primarily because technology permitted society to not only make certain advances regarding the protection of information, but also to recognize benefits in sharing information. The risks and benefits of the future of privacy and technology will be characterized by the continual monitoring of technological applications to determine that the benefits merit the risks. In addition to the challenge of technology, questions currently exist regarding the basis on which individuals will trust each other at an organizational, state, and national level to share PHI, and what is the governance of the organizations that will decide. A basic, significant question affecting informational privacy is whether the patient should even have an option to opt out of such sharing. Confidentiality mediated by technology. While the importance of confidentiality has not diminished over the years, the burgeoning complexity of healthcare and its reliance on information technology to drive innovation and commerce has complicated the ways in which we can observe confidentiality. Americans tend to value innovation and technological progress in every corner of society, and healthcare is a prime example. In an increasingly fragmented healthcare delivery system, continuity of care and doctor-patient bonds are being replaced by a technologically mediated care framework. In this new system, the many different fragmented arms of healthcare access a core repository of health-related information. Meanwhile, the patient may or may not be directly involved in this process. The current thinking, however, is that gains in healthcare and costs are achievable only with the patient's participation. The concept of the patient-centered medical home is inclusive of the majority of practitioners and interventions focused on the patient, coordinated through the primary care physician using mid-level practitioners with the assistance of the electronic health record. Although quality, and therefore the value of healthcare, remains to be finally defined, it is clear that value will be the benchmark of future payment. Although there is no doubt that electronic health records and the digitization of much of our personal medical information is an important, beneficial technological advance that promises to improve the quality of care and reduce costs and medical errors, these technologies also increase the potential for risks to patients that is seldom accounted for in their utilitarian justifications. And yet, electronic health records, as well as new information technologies such as cloud computing, online consultations, and internet prescribing, achieve their highest potential benefit when they are accessible throughout the medical system, their flow is unrestrained, and they contain accurate and complete information. In the first year of reported results for Pioneer ACOs, the ACOs generated lower readmissions rates and better blood pressure control when compared to other Medicare providers. In addition, one-third generated a cost savings. Although it is rational to believe that there are benefits in care coordination, the large-scale and ongoing benefits remain to be seen. However, the concomitant risks posed by these technologies are also at their highest and most dangerous under the same conditions that render the technologies the most useful. One of the potential avenues for abuse or breach of the duty of confidentiality is that while most private patient information is rapidly becoming computerized and more easily dispersed, the number of people who have ready access to the information is increasing at a staggering rate. Staff and employees throughout the healthcare system, including those at hospitals and doctors' offices, insurance companies, laboratories, allied healthcare entities, accounting and billing firms, and others, have access to electronic health records and the private information they contain. Although laws, policies, and regulations theoretically limit the scope of disclosure, a patient's confidentiality remains easily and regularly violable. Permission is not always sought for this disclosure, nor is the patient made aware of the potential breadth of the disclosure by healthcare staff. Social media affects privacy significantly. With the advent of medical condition websites, collectives have developed platforms for cancer and Parkinsonism patients to share information and experiences. Other websites, such as CaringBridge, invite patients, family, and friends to communicate regarding medical conditions. Even crowdfunding sites have developed to help patients pay medical bills. As some physicians have opted to practice concierge medicine, meaning limiting their patient base, one of the additional benefits has been email exchange with a physician. Chapter highlights. In this chapter, we examined the often misused terms privacy and confidentiality. Privacy is an individual's expectation to keep or control access to his or her individual space and information. Confidentiality is the ethical and legal obligation to refrain from sharing information about other people without their authorization. From their roots in the ethical norm of respecting individuals and their autonomy, we also explored these two concepts as a manifestation of a caring and trusting relationship between healthcare provider and healthcare consumer. We also investigated how these two terms have evolved as legal doctrines in the United States and surveyed a few cases that illustrate this evolution. From this historical overview, We examined how the ethical and legal concept of a right to privacy and common sense expectations for confidentiality between doctors and patients have slowly been replaced by an expanding and convoluted web of policies, guidelines, accreditation standards, laws, and regulations. With the exception of common law civil action, these laws and regulations tend to focus on the rights of the healthcare provider, oversight agencies, and the government, rather than on those of the patient. We also looked at several statutes that contain privacy rules, including HIPAA, GINA, and the ACA. We examined not only their provisions, but some of the major misunderstandings and myths about these statutes. Case studies were also used to illustrate some of the essential moral bases for privacy and confidentiality, as well as the legal and regulatory contexts in which healthcare organizations practice. Case study: Genentech and Shelbyville, Community-Based Participatory Research and Privacy. The following case study affords students an opportunity to not only understand GINA when applied, but also to consider the personal decisions a patient must make in choosing to be tested. The context: located in the mountains of Arkansas, Shelbyville is a small, close-knit mining town that is almost entirely dependent on a large lead-zinc mining operation, SKB. This company employs much of the town and is responsible, through community outreach, for much of the town's infrastructure, education, and health service. Although Shelbyville does not have a full-service hospital, it does have a modern, well-staffed, multi-use clinic that specializes in preventative and acute care. The clinic is owned and operated by SKB as part of its employee health program, but is also open to non-employee community members as well as those who cannot afford to pay for health care. You are the newly appointed general director of the clinic. You oversee all of the day-to-day healthcare administration duties, along with a small executive staff. Shelbyville, though in a beautiful location, is rather isolated from the rest of the world, and for as long as anyone can remember, there has been intermarrying among the town's six large family clans. It is a hard-working community that has recently fallen on hard times because SKB is restructuring after being bought out by a large multinational conglomerate known as Global Synergy. There has even been talk of Global Synergy closing some of its mining operations altogether. For more than 50 years, the townspeople of Shelbyville have been quietly aware of a terrible disease among their population. It seems that the relative homogeneity of the gene pool in the town for troubling familial clusters of both hypothyroidism and Huntington's disease. Huntington's disease is a genetic disorder that appears without warning between the ages of 30 and 60. It causes irreversible mental and motor deterioration and invariably leads to death after several years of intense pain and suffering for both patient and family. There is currently no known treatment or cure for this genetic disorder. Everyone who has inherited the gene will develop the disease and also transmit it to approximately half of his or her children. Pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, prenatal predictive testing, and predictive genetic testing for the disease for children, adolescents, and adults only recently became available. Though the town clinic does not have the capacity to do genetic testing, it has been treating the sufferers and sending care nurses and physicians to the sufferer's home for chronic treatment, which is very expensive. Local and state laws do not require that a diagnosis of HD be reported to public health authorities. As the general director of Shelbyville's health clinic, you are concerned about the high incidence of HD in your community. In an effort to help your medical staff learn how to better diagnose, assist, and counsel those affected by the disease, you recently sent one of your young physicians to an HD medical conference in St. Louis, Missouri. While there, the physician spoke with an HD genetic researcher who described the importance of acquiring a large genetic database with a high incidence of HD in order to help his pharmaceutical company-sponsored researcher to better understand and hopefully find a cure for this horrible disease. The researcher also mentioned that he would be willing to pay a one-time $150,000 finder's fee to anyone who would locate a source site for this kind of database. The physician told the researcher that he had just this kind of cluster back home. The researcher makes immediate plans for his research to focus on Shelbyville. The problem: The St. Louis researcher arrives in Shelbyville with a genetic database research protocol approved by a central IRB and makes plans to call for volunteers from among the clinic's patients, advertise heavily in the local media, and deploy a small army of recruiters and study personnel in your community. On the same day that the researcher arrives, you receive several faxes from the community-based participatory research and development arm of Genentech. A quick internet search shows that Genentech is the pharmaceutical sponsor of the trial, as well as a wholly owned subsidiary of Global Synergy, the global conglomerate that owns SKB and, by extension, your clinic. While at first you were excited about the potential of an HD research study based in Shelbyville, you soon realize that there might be much reticence among the population to participate in a trial that may risk publicly portraying the town in a negative light. You are also concerned about the fact that the clinic, the mine, and the biotech firm conducting the research are all owned by the same entity. To allay any fears you may have, Genentech agrees to include other disorders in the protocol. This way, HD will not call as much attention to itself. Additionally, the information will be de-identified and securely locked in a file cabinet at the clinic, as well as on several researcher laptops and a Genentech computer server operated by Global Synergy. These precautions are in place to protect the subject's privacy and to ensure that no one but the subjects, if they request it, will be made aware of their own HD status or the probability of transmitting it to their offspring. Due to this internal agreement at Genentech, the protocol's lengthy, jargon-filled informed consent form says that the study is aimed at compiling a genetic information database in order to look at the problem of the prevalence of hypothyroidism in the small community. Part of the consent form reads, quote, "By signing this document, I also consent to having my de-identified sample used for other research to help find cures for other genetic diseases, such as, but not limited to, Tay-Sachs disease, sickle cell anemia, and Huntington's disease." This is the only mention made of HD in the informed consent document. The document also states that there is little chance of the subject obtaining any personal or direct benefit from the research. As part of the IRB review, Genentech was obliged to obtain community consent for the research and has scheduled a town hall meeting to discuss the research and obtain the consent of the community before proceeding. Before the town hall meeting is scheduled to occur, the City Council of Shelbyville has formally requested that you write a short recommendation for what the City of Shelbyville should do. Please visit your text for an activity on this case study. Case study: ongoing HIPAA violations. Between May 4, 2016 and May 8, 2018, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services documented 395 cases of HIPAA violations that affected 500 or more people per incident. Please see Figure 5.2 in your text. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office for Civil Rights is responsible for HIPAA enforcement. The OCR posts the top five issues in investigated cases. Please see Table 5.2 in your text. You will notice that the top five issues in the list are largely consistent from year to year. The following are examples provided by the OCR that illustrate the enforcement issue of impermissible uses and disclosures, as listed in the Issue 1 column for 2013 through 2015 in Table 5.2. Pharmacy chain. A chain pharmacy disclosed protected health information to municipal law enforcement officials in a manner that did not conform to the provisions of the privacy rule. Among other corrective actions to resolve the specific issues in the case, OCR required this chain to revise its national policy regarding law enforcement's access to patient protected health information to comply with the privacy rule requirements, including that disclosures of protected health information to law enforcement only be made in response to written requests from law enforcement officials unless state law requires otherwise. Hospital messages. A hospital employee did not observe minimum necessary requirements when she left a telephone message with the daughter of a patient that detailed both her medical condition and treatment plan. An OCR investigation also indicated that the confidential communications requirements were not followed, as the employee left the message at the patient's home telephone number, despite the patient's instructions to contact her through her work number. Health plan. An employee of a major health insurer impermissibly disclosed the protected health information of one of its members without following the insurer's authorization and verification procedures. Health system. A nurse practitioner who has privileges at a multi-hospital healthcare system and who is part of the system's organized healthcare arrangement impermissibly accessed the medical records of her ex-husband. Breaches reported by the California Department of Public Health include employee text. An admitting clerk in the hospital's occupational health department accessed and used the health information of a patient. The patient informed the facility that he received a sexual text message from employee A. Employee A admitted that he sent the message and that he had sent messages to approximately 8 to 10 other patients over a one-year period. Employee to employee. Patient A, a hospital employee, was admitted to the hospital. The risk manager performed an audit regarding who accessed patient A's medical record as a matter of routine. Patient A told coworker C that he was in the hospital. Coworker C told coworker B, and coworker B accessed patient A's medical record. Coworker B told patient A of the access and apologized. RN flash drive. In preparation for attending a conference, an RN, contrary to policy, downloaded the patient information of 209 patients on an unencrypted flash drive. The RN intended to work on a quality project while away. When the RN returned, he realized that he had lost the flash drive. The RN stated that he forgot there was a policy regarding the use of flash drives. Please see your text for discussion questions on this case study. End of Chapter 5.